Okay, we got the recording going. Okay. Let's take a moment at the start of our call today to really bring ourselves fully forward. We're going to be holding a lot today. Let's get present. So I invite you to close your eyes if that's comfortable and available to you. And give yourself a couple of moments to remember your body. Come into your body. And to notice your breath. No need to manipulate it in any way. Just notice it. And with each breath, give yourself permission to become more fully present to this moment and to our time together today. Allowing yourself to be fully here. And as you breathe and connect, I invite you to connect back to your deep why for being here. Connect back to what it is that you really want, what it is that you really desire that brought you to this work that we're doing together. Whatever that deep why is, on your next breath, reset that intention. Really remember it. Reactivate it. And together we'll take a nice deep breath in and exhale everything out. And then you can open your eyes, bringing yourself fully present. Okay, so we're starting a new module today. Yay! It's a four-session module that is all about visioning and strategizing. As you'll see, the two really go hand in hand. I really like to look at them together. So over the next three calls, we'll be live, and we'll be looking at co-creating visions that stick and flourish. In our next session, which will be in 2 weeks, we're going to look at the energetics of new things, really important also to look at. And then we'll look at strategizing. And then the fourth call of this module will be a recorded practicum that you'll get. Before we jump in, one housekeeping piece, which is around now, is a good time in the program to just say this. You don't have, this is not required, but just to toss it your way if it's interesting. It's nice sometimes for those of you that are doing coaching partner practice. It's nice sometimes to also get exposed to other partners, right? Because I like to have one partner that you have throughout or most of the time, because there's a lot to be said about working with the same person over time and gathering the threads and, all of that. But there's also something to be said to experience different types of personalities and energies and practice your skills that way as well. So, if that's something that you'd like to do, get some other practice, kind of practice the skills with other people, other energies, definitely post in the Facebook group. I know that there are people looking, and it's kind of a fun way to stretch. All right. So, Kelsey, do you have a question about that?
Would you recommend doing it like with a new practice partner from now to the end of the program, or saying like we could do 4 sessions together? Or
yeah, I would, I think like for, you know, doing a couple of sessions would be great. You can kind of see once you connect what will work for the both of you. But anywhere from, you know, anywhere from one, I mean, really just whatever's going to work for the both of you. So that's a long-winded way of saying no recommendations there, but it's a good question. Any other questions on partners before we jump in? Coaching partners. All right. And I'm seeing in the chat that some people are open. Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, probably the best way is to post in the Facebook group, or you can connect with each other individually, you know, here. Okay. So we're going to take a look today, as I said, at co-creating magnificent visions. So we're going to be looking all at the skill of supporting clients to vision. And we'll get to what that means in a little bit and best practices for doing that. So I want to start with a quote from someone named Keith Ellis from a book called The Magic Lamp. I read probably over two decades ago now, but I've always loved this quote. He writes, "When people don't get what they want from life, usually it's because they don't know what they want. When people don't get what they want from life, usually it's because they don't know what they want." I believe that a big part of the job of the coach, and really any practitioner in one way or another, is to help your clients get clear on what they really want. And there's more to this than meets the eye. It's a skill, for sure. So the vision, the client's vision, what they really want, is in a lot of ways at the heart of whatever kind of coaching that you do or healing that you do, what the client really wants. And that's, you know, what, when I say what the client really wants, we'll get into all of the aspects of that. But what, you know, generally what I mean by that is we can look at vision as like a bigger overarching vision, right? So, you know, putting it in the business context, a bigger overarching vision is maybe your client wants a full private practice, and they want 2 programs, and they want retreats. You know, there's probably more to it. I'm just making that up. That's like a bigger vision. But we can also apply visioning skills to larger goals that may be the next part of the bigger vision. So maybe the larger goal that's part of the big vision there is creating and filling the next program. Right? And then visioning skills can also apply to smaller sub goals. An example in the example that we've been looking at is a smaller sub goal might be an enrollment conversation that's happening for the next program, right? So we can vision on the highest level, we can vision on like the larger goals, and then we can vision on the smaller goals. And when we support our client to have those visions, the vision becomes almost like a detailed profile that's a guiding light for the client. It's a place to aspire to, a place to work towards, a place to stay aligned with. Back to that quote, when people don't get what they want from life, usually it's because they don't know what they want, right? So this is about supporting clients to know what they want. Visioning can set the stage for personal, organizational, or social change. When you want personal, organizational, or social change, visioning is a big piece of that. And you know, some people say, I go back and forth on this, some people say that one of the things that sets coaching apart from therapy is the visioning, which is essentially the focus on the future. The reason I go back and forth is because I believe that the best kind of therapy also does focus on the future, but that's a distinctive feature of coaching. Visioning helps clients open up to future possibilities that are in alignment with their core values. We're going to talk more about that because that's really important. So without a vision, not always, because nothing is always ever 100% true, but without vision, much of the time, if you haven't supported a client to create a vision, they will go aimlessly from goal to goal without real direction. So for those of you that have been in curriculum lab with me, you know I use this metaphor for curriculum, and this you also use this metaphor for visioning. Think about a cross-country trip, right? So if you were to go on a cross-country, I'm a native New Yorker, right? So I always think of, you know, New York to the West Coast. So if you're in New York and you want to go on a trip, but you haven't really decided where you're going, to the West Coast, to California, to San Francisco, right? But you just go on the road trip. You don't know where to stop or what direction to go in or where to take breaks or how long it's going to take, right? If you know you're going from New York and you've got a vague goal to the West Coast, that can help a little bit, you know, to plot out a path. But the more precise you can get on the end goal or the vision, the easier you can set out on the sub goals and know how to take that cross country trip. There is absolutely value sometimes to not fully knowing and taking side trips that can yield really wonderful things, right? I don't want to be so Virgo about all of this, but the more that we can be clear, the better. As a side note, this visioning and the way that we're talking about it is really important in enrollment conversations too. And I'll bring that up a little bit throughout this conversation, and then maybe I'll do a Facebook Live on it as well. But visioning is really important for marketing in general. What we learned today in terms of vision, I want you to be thinking about in your marketing and in your enrollment conversations. Okay. I want to talk for a few minutes about what can go wrong when you are co-creating a vision. What are some of the things that can go wrong? So first, let's talk about when you get it right. So when you support a client to get the vision right, you're really helping them build a strong foundation. And kind of that bigger vision is one of the things that I like to look at first with clients before we start working together. Because again, back to the road trip I was talking about, you know, if I have a client and it's just like out the door running on the next little goal, but we haven't really visioned out where they're ultimately going, how do we know if that little goal makes sense for them? Right? We want to see how it fits in the bigger picture. So it can really set a strong foundation. When you don't have the bigger vision, you might be able to have some forward movement, and maybe you've recognized this for yourself with a client. Like when you haven't set out the bigger vision, you can maybe get some traction in the beginning, but usually it kind of comes to a halt, at a certain point, or things kind of get a little off key. A lot of times when you co-create visions with clients, if you're not looking at certain things, and we're going to take a look at, you know, all the things that I think are important to look at with visions, the vision can also end up being misaligned. A misaligned vision is usually one that's either not realistic for the client, not truly desired by the client, or that the client doesn't believe that they can achieve. So when you've got a misaligned vision, one that's either not realistic, not actually desired, or not believable by the client, this can lead to, again, you might get some traction in the beginning, but ultimately either the vision won't get done, or the client will at some point get stuck and stymied. There might be lack of motivation. The client might get drained, or, which is almost like, I don't know, in some ways the worst thing, you'll get to, and the client will get the vision done, but then not feel happy or satisfied and like, and I do want to make sure I say this before we go any further. Of course, visions can change as an individual evolves, right? And that's one of the things that we want to track as practitioners too, supporting clients to achieve their visions, is if it's shifted, that's okay. That's natural and normal. It's not a problem if it shifts. It can become a problem if it's shifted, but neither you nor your client realize it, right? Also to say, a vision may not be fully formed at first. Like, we're all in this culture, clarity chasers, right? But like, sometimes a vision just isn't, it's just not ready to be fully formed. And that's okay too. So a lot of practitioners aren't aware that part of their job is to help their clients get clear, or as clear as possible, on a vision that is aligned for them. Many practitioners also aren't aware that their filters may be part, like playing a role in the process of articulating the vision, right? Now we've looked at filters. So we all already, our unchecked filters aren't going to get in the way, right? But it's important to mention that. I've just seen it happen so many times where a client will come out of a visioning session with the coach's vision versus the client's vision. Right? We really just want to be aware of our filters. Another thing that a lot of practitioners don't realize is that much of the time supporting a client to create a vision is a deep dive versus a surface reveal. And the reason why it is usually a deep dive versus a surface reveal is because most people don't give themselves full permission to vision for real. They do not give themselves the internal permission. And I'm one of the few people that are going to say this, but I stand by it. And it's part of the problem of the industry. People overvision unrealistic things. They overvision. And I'm all about possibility, right? So when I say that, I'm not like a dream squelcher, I promise, right? But this, like, you know, you can make $1 million overnight, you know, you can clear all of your hormonal problems in 2 weeks, you know, like that, it leads to clients over-visioning unrealistic things, right? So it's like it's a deep dive because of under-visioning and over-visioning, if you will. As sacred depths practitioners, we want to create a container with our clients that really gives them permission to be in their full visioning capacity in a way that is aligned and realistic for them. All right, so let's look a little bit more at this piece for yourself. You know, whenever I ask these kind of journaling questions, they're always for you and your own learning and awareness, but also so that you can be aware of different things that might be going on for your clients. So here's a question to journal on for a moment. How were you given or not given permission as a child to vision for yourself? How were you given or not given permission as a child to vision for yourself? Here's another question to add to the exploration. What did you learn or not learn from your parents or adult figures about having a vision? What did you learn or not learn from your parents or other adult figures in your life about having a vision? Here's another question. How has dominant culture impacted your ability to vision? I want to explain this question for a moment. So, how has dominant culture impacted your ability to vision? This may be true for everyone or not, but I ask this question because if you are someone who comes from a marginalized group, or if you have a client that comes from a marginalized group, dominant culture may have impacted your client's ability to vision, right? Or your ability to vision, like what you're allowed or not allowed to have or want for yourself. How has dominant culture impacted your ability to vision? This is an inner question, and it's also a filter question. All right, two more questions for right now. Scale of 1 to 10, how often do you really allow yourself to fully vision? So 10 is like you are in your vision, you allow yourself, you give your full permission often. 1 is, you know, you're recognizing you are not giving yourself permission much to vision. How often do you really allow yourself? And then last question, wherever that number is for you, why? Anika, thanks for sharing that you're feeling triggered. Are you willing to come voice to voice so we can connect? Yeah, thank you. It's good to see you. What's coming up for you?
I've been struggling to visualize. I don't even know how to begin. Everything has always been controlled and directed. Yeah. And even what I wanted to do in school, I couldn't. And so I don't even know any groundwork, framework, structure around it at all. And even now, every time I try, I was like, okay, but where do I want to go? How do I want to go? I'm just lost. It starts and then it goes poof.
Yeah.
And it's so hard to advance when I have no idea exactly where I'm going, you know, or what I want. And everyone asks me, well, what do you want? I don't know what I want.
Yeah.
I wasn't expecting this.
Yeah, I know. You just thought you were coming to a visioning call. I'm so glad that it's coming up, though. It feels really important that it's coming up. And it feels, tell me if you agree with this, it feels important that you're willing to share it and express it.
I don't think I've ever said it aloud.
Yeah.
Why I see that? Everyone have these great visions and plans and I'm like, oh no.
Why is it important to say it aloud?
It makes it more real and makes me feel less crazy and stupid and I don't know where I'm supposed to be going.
Yes.
Yeah. Especially at my age.
Yeah, so what I'm hearing you saying, tell me if I'm getting this right, is even just this step today, right here, of sharing what you're sharing is coming from this newer part of you that knows that you deserve to have a vision and that you can, right? And that this, it's not crazy.
I want one so badly, so badly.
Yeah.
Even my work is stagnant because I know it's not where I want to go, but I don't know where I want to go or where I'm supposed to be going or anything. So it just stays where it is.
Yeah. So I think we'll start to like poke into different ways to move forward over the next few calls. You know, we'll get to like some different how pieces, you know, how that will help. What's important for now, will you tell me what's important for you right now, just with all of the awareness that's come up? What's important for you to remember?
That it's not my fault that I don't have a vision.
I get chills when you say that. Let's just let that really land. It is not your fault, Anika, that you don't have a vision. It's not your fault.
I've been hating on myself.
That's right.
I've been really sensitive these past 2 weeks.
You don't need to apologize for the beautiful emotion that's coming out. It's important. It's important. So it's not your fault, right? It's not your fault. And tell me if it's okay to add this, because I feel like this is what I'm hearing. And you will have a vision that's revealed. There's a part of you that knows that too. Okay. Is that a good place to land on for now and to, you know, not even rush to like the how and, you know, because that, right? Like just let that sink in for a bit.
It helps with the guilt.
Yes. A lot. Yes. Good. I'm so glad. And this would be a wonderful thing to journal on over the next few days too. Thank you so much for being willing to raise your hand on this and to share what's coming up. It's so important. I'm so glad that it came through. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, everybody, deep breath in and out. I was just about to ask for shares, so that was perfect. I'd love to hear one or two more shares. What's coming through? What are you seeing? What feels important so far here? Sharon.
Hi. Well, first, I really want to honor Anika for being so vulnerable. Thank you. And yeah, you know, in terms of the dominant culture, and it kind of ties into that, the beautiful sacred power call that you did, that I did go back and listen to, I've been studying marketing for 14 years. I didn't really study it as a massage therapist. I didn't need to. And it's, even though I really didn't get caught up in the whole 6 and 7 figure coach thing, still, there is that dominant culture, and I'm just in a place right now of actually taking a big step back, which is what I was saying a little bit to you in our little email exchange of, like, how do I really want to show up?
Yes.
In whatever time I have left. I mean, I'll always be a healer. I'll always be a helper. How do I really want to show up in the time that I have left? I mean, outside of sacred depths, like I'm really feeling like I'm done having business coaches, like business, like let's talk about the marketing and the, you know, well, the next obvious step is to X. It's like, no, actually there's no energy coming back towards me and I can't pull people in, and I'm happy to show up in the ways that I can show up. And I don't want it to be, I mean, I actually have had business coaches where they didn't even start with like, what did I really do and what was I about? It was like, how many clients do you need to see a week?
Right.
Like, ugh, I'm so done with it. I'm like, so done. Yeah.
That's exactly such a great example of why we're looking at this so deeply, right? Because when we ignore the, like, what is, how is it, like you said it so beautifully, how is it that you really want to spend your time? What is it that you really want? Then it's, again, it's the coach's filters. It's the coach's vision. It's the, right? It's, we're not serving our client. And even, and we'll get to this a little bit, even when we are looking at the vision, we want as practitioners to understand, like, where is the messaging of the patriarchy, you know, like, right. So we'll get to that too.
You said that about, you know, a lot of people, you know, they undervision, but then there's the overvisioning, and there's so much of that. In this industry, and you got to do all the things and be all the places and
right. And the thinking that that's what's going to make me whole, you know, that then I'll have my salvation, right? Not true.
Or, and then I'll have like the amazing practice and I'll be helping so many people. It's like, I want to help the people I can help and know that will ripple out and then they will show up differently in the world. And
yes.
Yeah.
Yes. 100%. Thanks for bringing that forward. So yeah. Important. Maya.
Hi. I actually wanted to speak in defense of over-visioners. But first, I wanted to thank Anika, because as I was listening to you, I was like, how come I can't break down like that? This is everything that I'm feeling, but I don't know how to do this. I have spent a lifetime doing the work, getting to the point where I know what I don't want. When I know how to say that I don't want something, and that's a lot of work, but I still can't necessarily say what I do want. It's really hard to see. And ironically, on the flip side, I overvision, because if it's not real, then what the hell, I might as well go for the stars. And I think that might be a lot of the reason for people who overvision, not necessarily that they are, well, I guess they are unrealistic, but there's a certain trauma and a sort of something related to choice that is in there that perhaps needs to be teased out before they can be a little bit more grounded.
Completely. I'm so glad you're bringing that forward. And it's almost to me, like the words that come is like the difference between fantasy and vision. And I think that fantasy holds, like, can hold a positive place if used intentionally. Like, I definitely fantasize about things, right, that are not necessarily realistic visions, but it's the understanding. And then how are you using that? So thank you for bringing that forward. So important. Leah.
Yeah, so I was just, you know, in all of this journaling, reflecting on this, like, I feel like I got this mixed message going on growing up of like, vision, dream, do this big thing, whatever you want, the world, you know, and then also like, but only if it aligns with our vision from my parents. Right. You know what I mean?
You can do anything so long as it's good for art, right? Yes.
Right.
And you're not alone in that. I'm so glad you're bringing that forward. This is one of the things we want to be aware of as a possibility with clients too. Keep on going.
And then, you know, I was seeing that my parents were big visioners and they created a lot of change and living outside of the box and whatnot. But because they were so stuck to their vision that they created a lot of turmoil and upset and challenge and whatnot as well. And so there was always this like fear in me to really like have a clear vision, because I didn't want to create discord. I didn't want to create upset. So I think that's what I've been really becoming more and more aware of, is like, okay, I can have a clear vision and bring it forth in a way that doesn't create that discord. So that was helpful to see today. It's like, cause I'm afraid of really fully visioning, because I don't want to create problems.
Right. I'm so glad that that has come through, right? That's such a big, important awareness that's going to help you shift that now, not in your blind spot anymore. Beautiful. Thank you, Leah. LV.
Hi. So I'm just so moved today by the call so far. I just love the idea of co-creating and working with the coach as co-creators. I feel like I've fallen, and I've had good and bad experiences in the past. And that's, I'm echoing what I think it was Jaren who said, I'm done with the business type coaches. I've tried to follow formulas that don't align with who I am. And I'm realizing that I have to trust my intuition and my way of working with people, so that it creates a beautiful space and it creates a connection that can work. I can't follow scripts. I'm done with all of that. So I'm really appreciating that you are elevating that element of co-creating, and I'm also feeling into embracing the void when we're like not really fully having the vision so clear. Because I think in that void, there's so much magic happening and brewing. And I was really moved by Annika's chair. And I was just thinking there's so much richness underneath all of that. Mm-hmm. That undercurrent that's there is going to give her so much fabric for what she can create when her vision starts to appear. So it was really, I was very moved by her.
I'm so glad that you're bringing that forward. I mean, all of it, and particularly this last piece. It's yes. And we will do a full call later on in the program on being in the mystery, because that's important, right? It's not about always knowing.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you. Mark and Jenny.
Hi. Yeah, really appreciating this call and what you said earlier about unrealistic visions, because that's not really a common thing that's talked about. And one thing me and Mark were talking about earlier is like, I mean, yeah, there's what you said about the make $1 million and all that. And I think a lot of that is through kind of this hyper-capitalist, you know, filter that we have. But in addition to the materialistic stuff, there's also in the more like kind of spiritual or psychological or self-help realm, sometimes this like total transformation. And it's like this kind of magic, like selling magic, you know, that is troubling to me.
Yeah, it's hard because there's the kind of magic, like life is magical and creativity is magical.
Right. Of course.
Things happen, but then it feels like, and especially in the coaching industry, there's like this selling magic, like just do this and then you'll have an abundance mindset and the money will flow in, and just do this practice and you'll just always love yourself and be confident for everyone.
Totally.
And yeah. I feel like we're seeing lately in potential clients something that we're also feeling, which is just this fatigue of like what is happening in the coaching industry. I'm finding it a little hard to know like where to go with it now in terms of working with clients and how to talk about what we do and just the whole thing.
Yes. Well, I'll just offer this, and I offered this, I think, in our first call, but it's important if it lands, you know, it's good to come back to. First of all, transformation, every now and again, there's the magical, right? But transformation is work, right? That's number one. Like it is. I share with, you know, when I have an enrollment conversation, you know, with private clients, I will share to them, if you are looking for the practitioner that's going to launch you to the moon and back in a day, I'm not your gal. That's not how this works, right? So I set that expectation from the get-go, and then a reminder of the difference between a breakthrough and a transformation, right? The break, we want to be co-creating breakthroughs with clients, right? And then, but the other part of the work is supporting the clients then to persistently and consistently use their breakthroughs to move towards real change. And that just might be helpful if that lands for you to share that as a paradigm with your clients as well, so that there's shared expectation around the work that you're doing together. Yeah, thank you for bringing that forward. Julia.
Yes. So when I started in this industry, one of my visions was to be a representation for other people who looked like me, sounded like me. I've lived 17 years in Africa, 24 years in Canada, very different spaces. I found recently when I was doing the visioning that the person who showed up were all the mentors, and they were blonde, blue-eyed, skinny, and it terrified me because it showed me that in my way, I was trying to emulate them on my way to my stage and what would be right for me and what would be. And it's still scary because, unfortunately, most of my mentors, so as I keep working with them, you know, in these year-long programs as I've been doing for the last 6 years, how do I separate that or the voice or the image, kind of like put mine there in its place?
Yeah, I'm so glad you're bringing this forward. It's so important. And like, first, just the awareness is so big of that, right? That like, that may not be your role model, right? For vision, right? And then what I'm hearing in that, and I think you can tell me, but what I'm hearing in what you're saying, and this is the work, is giving yourself the agency, right? To have your vision. And maybe also bringing in some role models that do, you know, that aren't white, skinny, blonde, you know, all of that, right? I'm saying this as a white person, I'm not blonde, but, right? I mean, so I'm so glad that you're in process with it. And I think the awareness is key, and that building of your own knowing and agency is so key in it too. And I'm so glad that you're out there as a role model. Is that helpful?
Very. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Lisa.
Yes, I find this idea of visioning fatigue really, really up for me right now. I have a client and she's really in a place of like, what's the point? She's tried and she's cared and she's set a vision and it hasn't come true. And she feels, it's like she's afraid of visioning because like her heart has been burned. Like she's scared. She's scared to set a vision because she's afraid she'll feel disappointed, let down again.
Yes, 100%. So I always hate to say wait till next session, but wait till next session because it's a thing, right? We're gonna look next session at when clients have resistance to visioning, and also what I call the energetics of new things, and really looking at some of that, because that can help with the visioning and moving forward to, you know, into new things when there is some of the fear or the being burnt by the vision before. So glad you're bringing it up, and it'll take a whole session to get through.
That's fine. And I think I'm also just sort of following the lead of the creative cycle. I'm realizing that, you know, she needs to, we need to lean into those feelings before, you know, it's the winter, right? It's like,
exactly.
Before the vision can come.
Exactly. So that was one of the things that we were going to get to today, but since you're bringing it up, we'll just go there. You want to be aware of what season your client is in, because they may not be in visioning season, mm-hmm. right? If there are if there is exhaustion, very hard to vision. Well, you know, you took sacred rhythms, right? So all of those winter things, if there is like a lot of, you know, being burnt by the last thing or pain or wounding, that needs to be, you know, looked at first with your client before moving into visioning. So really understanding where it is a client in spring, summer, or is a client in autumn, winter, is gonna help so much in determining, like, is this a moment for a big vision, creating a big vision, or is this a moment to first do the clearing out work to get us to the vision?
Yeah, that feels right. That feels where she's at. And I think my role is more than anything just to really hold space for all of that. Yeah.
Yeah, and to create awareness around it, right? So if like the seasonal metaphor is something that would land for her, like I would really create awareness around it just to give permission to be in the winter even. And then you can do that winter work with her as well.
It's okay to, I think it's related to that belief we have of faster is better. We got to get somewhere, you know, just permission to slow down and just be with what is. Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
Thank you.
Thank you. Elvie, we'll cover some of those pieces throughout the program for sure. Not as in depth as in sacred rhythms, but we'll touch on it. Lisa L, two Lisas.
So this might shed some light on your client, because I really struggle with visioning for myself. I'm very good at doing it for my clients, but I am stunted there. And when I was journaling, I realized two reasons why. And one was I was a big dreamer when I was little, and my dad always said, don't get your hopes up. Like, you're gonna be disappointed. Don't think big. And I still hear that all the time in so many areas of my life, and it stunts. Like every time I'm like, don't get your hopes up, and I'm working actively. So there's these messages that come in that could be affecting your client too, Lisa. And the other thing is, I grew up in a family where there was no magic and there was no spirituality. Everything was very much scientific, almost. I was Jewish, but it was almost an atheistic kind of environment. And so when I was a little girl and at night, and I would start like thinking about my life, I'd say, don't think about it. Because if you think about it, it's only a dream. It's only magic, and then it won't happen. And I wouldn't let myself do that. I like stunted my own, you know, envisioning right there. And it's something I actively have to work through now. But it is really interesting just to think about those things and how they've impacted us in our process now.
100%. I'm so glad those pieces are coming through. Like for you, now you've got a lot to chew on and, you know, to work on. And again, like I said earlier, that's why I asked these questions for us, and also to be aware of our clients are coming to visioning with stuff, right? And for us to look for it and support them to see that. Beautiful. Thank you. All right. And Rose.
Yes. This is like the best conversation for me. I'm seeing Lisa here. Let's see here. Maybe Lisa's, you're big on my screen instead of, it's great. I love seeing you, but anyway, I'm trying to talk to you.
You know how to change the gallery view?
There. Well, let me go to gallery view. Sorry, I can't, my thing. Okay, this is the best conversation because I'm personally in a lot of visioning fatigue myself. And I didn't know there was a name for it. I just was calling it fatigue, but I'm really getting that it's being exposed to, I'm exposed to marketing groups, and I'm beginning to unplug from everything, everyone, every subscription, everything, because if I don't have my own sovereignty, I have nothing. and I can't give to my clients. And so as just this whole idea of overvisioning, realizing that my number was a 5 in terms of what I'm able to vision right now because of this fatigue. But I grew up in a family where my father said, you can be anything you want. You can be the president of the United States. Well, I didn't want to be the president of the United States. There was no acknowledgement of where I was at, what was my baseline, what was my internal resonance. And so there was, I never learned a roadmap for how to get anywhere, because it was always, you can be anything, but there is a process. There's a, you know, there's a doingness scale of what's possible. And so it's, I'm in this process of learning what's possible. And so I'm also working with clients, but I'm always stunned at how my own personal work is reflected in my clients. So that's always, right. So this is like the best conversation. I can't wait to learn more. And thank you.
You're so welcome. I love the phrasing of your sovereignty, right? Mm-hmm. Which is like what we want for ourselves and what we want for our clients in all aspects of our work with them and when we vision with them. And in our marketing too, right? For our clients to still have their sovereignty. Okay. Okay, good. So, oh wait, I opened up the wrong, what's happening here? Sorry. All right. It's so funny because usually we only have 3 sessions for this module. And for whatever reason, this cycle, I was like, I think we need 4 sessions. I'm glad all of that came up. We're not going to get through all of our content for today, but that's okay because I added an extra session in. So, we're going to start looking at, we've already started looking, but we're going to start to look, we probably won't get through all of these guidelines for visioning effectively with clients. Guidelines for visioning effectively with clients. So first of all, as I said earlier, I like to, if possible, start with a vision up front, you know, in one of our first sessions. Right now, sometimes a client might be in autumn, and so it's a, you know, that will impact the visioning. They may not get clarity, you know, part of that vision might just be to get them out of the autumn in the winter, right? That's like as far as they can go. But I do like to start up front. So again, back to the road trip. So we know where we're going, right? Even if we haven't figured out the road trip all the way to the West Coast, like, I don't know, I never learned geography in grade school, so I'm going to get this wrong. Whatever state is in the middle of the country, right, from New York to there, right? But you want to know where you're going, or else you're just kind of throwing paint at the walls. I said earlier, visions are subject to change and resetting and, you know, checking in, all of that. It doesn't mean that you've done anything wrong as a practitioner if your client's vision changes throughout the course of your work. You may have done something very right, actually, as a practitioner, if your client's vision changes throughout the course of the work. But what you want to watch for is to catch it, right? To make sure that you become aware of it, that your client becomes aware of it if it's shifted. And the other piece just to throw out there too, just kind of little snippets before we get to the bigger pieces, is like, I personally don't believe in a 5-year vision, or like, we need to know so far out, like, what is my legacy? Where, I mean, I think as you get older, and that speaks a little bit to my age too, I'm 45, but I have never been able, like utter fail, to know what I'm doing more than a year out from where I am. And like, for the longest time, I thought that that was a liability, like there was something wrong with me. But what I've actually come to learn is that I've had a perfectly wonderful, successful business only seeing a year. I am a changing, evolving person. And like, I just don't want to commit, right? So we don't, anyway, you guys know what I mean. We don't necessarily need to get into the 5-year vision to vision well. Okay. Know the difference between a vision and a goal. Know the difference between a vision and a goal. This is important, again, just because of the road trip analogy. We don't want to create a goal before we have a vision. Because, again, when we jump into the goals before the vision, we don't have a guiding light. For example, you can't decide in business, let's say, you can't decide whether or not to run an ad if you don't have an ultimate vision of like where that free opt-in is going, like what you're doing with it, right? You want to have that vision. You can't support a client to make a decision if they should ask for a raise or not at work if they don't have a little bit of at least some kind of sense of where they want to go with their career. Like, what is their career vision? What are they going for? So you want to know the difference between a vision and a goal. Understand at least part of the vision first before creating the goals. This next piece has already come up. All of us as like good self-evolved people already know this, but it's important to look at it again for ourselves and for our clients. Know the difference between a desire and a should. Know the difference between a desire and a should. So again, it's actually mind-blowing how often without creating awareness on it or checking it, someone will just kind of, you know, blindly create a vision based on a should, based on somebody else's expectation, based on patriarchal messaging, based on what they think the right thing to do is, versus what their deep desire is, right? And sometimes, like, you know, it can be so subtle too, right? So if you, for example, if you're working with a client on relationships, the should might be, this isn't going to be a should for all people, it's not a should for me, but you know, a person says, I want to get married, right? That might be a should. Maybe the desire is to have a loving partnership. Or if somebody comes and they say, I want to lose 50 pounds. Well, is that a should or a desire? Is the desire they want to feel sexy in their body? I want to be a perfect parent. Right? Is that a should versus I want to have enough time to be able to help my kids with X, Y, and Z. So knowing the difference between that desire and the should, really supporting the client to be able to do that. So how can we support our clients to know the differences between a desire and a should? I'll ask you all first, how can we support our clients to know the difference between a desire and a should? Who's got some ideas on that? Solway.
Yeah, I mean, the first thing that's coming up for me is I think a desire is often more embodied. And so thinking about some of the things that you've shared about the levels with which we connect with ourselves, that I think connecting with those things in ourselves can really clarify the desire with the should. So connecting with body wisdom, practicing connecting with intuition, I think those things, that's what's coming up for me.
Yeah, I'm so glad you're bringing that into the picture for sure. I think body and heart are very related. You know, one of the notes I have for this class is that visions are products of the heart, right? And so supporting our clients to connect with their body or to connect with their heart, and really feel into what their heart desires, right? Even desire, right? The two words go together, heart's desire, right? Versus what's here. Beautiful. Thank you for bringing that forward. So important. Lisa B.
Ditto, it was already named.
Great minds think alike. Who else? Any other thoughts? How can we support our clients to know the difference between a desire and a should? Raka.
Hi. So this is something I'm really interested in. And I think most of us, our desires are like really conditioned. What we think we want isn't usually what we want. And you spoke to that a little bit. I think that one way to know, to help people know and for ourselves to know, is to like ask like deeper questions. So what happens if I get that? Yes. Like if this is the thing that I desire, what happens if I get that? Like, how will that feel? And what then, you know, what's underneath it? And also, like, if something I really desire, like, it's going to be exciting to even, like, imagine it. And for most people, like, you know, we don't have access to these things and we don't know that we don't have access to them. That was certainly my situation. So I think it's a process of getting to that place of, like, tracking what we really want. And I think it can't be separated from, like, other pieces of deconditioning, you know. It's like just even allowing ourselves to feel that is like, yeah, it just takes a bit of work. So
yeah, beautiful. So many beautiful things that you said. I'm gonna pull out a couple. Thank you. So first of all, and Solway spoke to this too, like where do you feel that in your body, right? Where do you feel that vision in your body? How you ask the question, how will it feel? I don't think you use these exact words, but how will you feel when you get there, right? Visions include our future selves also, right? How will you feel when you get there? Who will you be when you get there? And then you mentioned about exciting, right? I mean, I think that's probably a value for most people. We're going to talk about values in a moment, right? But does the vision correlate with their value? Is it exciting or is it fun or, you know, whatever it is? Awesome. Thank you. Dagmar, did you have your hand up?
Yeah, I did. Thank you. So yeah, I would really love to elaborate on what Solveig said, stepping and tapping into the body wisdom. And sometimes people have like even hard time discerning, like creating that conscious discernment, like, is it coming from should or is it coming from my desire? And I think it would be really meaningful to understand and really investigate in a loving and exploratory way, whose voice is this? And even which part of the body is it coming from? Is it coming from your womb, from your mind, from your belly, from your heart? And kind of like being on that playful adventure around the different voices and the different layers of shoots, desires, or kind of the perceptions they are getting, so they can really, you know, deepen understanding within themselves and really create a clarity around what the actual desire is.
Yeah, beautiful. Thanks for bringing that forward 100%, like really working with the body. Where is that vision coming from? You know, what does it want you to know? How does that feel in your body? And then through that body exploration, or even on the mental level of learning and processing, you know, to ask, well, where is that vision coming from, right? Is that your vision? Is that your father's vision, right? You know, and especially if you've got some background on the client and you can pull some threads there too. So creating awareness around that. Beautiful. These are all so wonderful. Maya.
I love what Dagmar said about the voices. I'm a visual person. So oftentimes when I say something, if I'm sensitive to it, I can see in the back of my mind a face or a space
that I'm in, or a person who like the message is coming from. But what I was going to say actually, and I might be off the mark, but I'm pulling something from my work with the creative students, which is also, I guess, a way of visioning, designing, and creative sort of visions, visioning. And two tools I'm sure you guys are familiar with are obviously the whys, and running through five whys and getting to 10 whys, whatever rocks your boat, however deep you're willing to go, and getting to the bottom line and getting to a very abstract, actually, right? So maybe it's not the 50 pounds, like you said, maybe something else can answer that need if you figure out the bigger, more abstract need. And also a tool that is a little bit more specific, and again, maybe you've heard of it, I'm sure, it's called what, so what, now what. So again, just kind of like getting to the bottom of why this comes up, why is this desire, and what's going to come after it if it is achieved. So I think a lot of these things can probably be folded into it.
Beautiful. Yes, those are wonderful. So that the why, right? Like, why do you have this vision? Why do you desire this? Why is this coming up? Creates so much awareness. And then what was the second? I know the what else, but I feel like you said it in a different way.
What? So what?
So what?
Now what?
Now what? Beautiful. I love that, right? That's that open ended. Mm-hmm. Yes. Beautiful. Naomi. You're on mute.
My apologies. What's coming to me, just to add, I really resonate with what's been shared already. So thank you, everyone. To add, when I think should, there's like this, it feels like a chore. So the energy around the should is different than the energy around the desire. And I something that's feeling called to share is just finding that balance too. Because yeah. Sometimes there is a should that needs to support the vision and, you know, right. And can marry with the desire. But just that, yeah, that shouldness is heavier and doesn't create space and joy.
Yes. I feel like you're saying two really important things that I want to pull out. So one is like, shoulds aren't always bad, right? Like, I have shoulds throughout my day, right? But being intentional, right, and knowing the difference is important. And then the energy, the difference energetically between a should and a desire. And sometimes it might be with a client about like taking a step back or two and actually asking them, what is the energy of a should? How does that feel in your body? What is the energy of desire, right? To start to kind of know their body's barometer around that. Or what are the messages in my head when I'm on a should versus what are the messages and beliefs in my head when I'm on a desire, right? Beautiful. Bruce, did you have your hand raised?
No, Naomi said literally exactly what I was going to say. Thanks, Naomi.
I love it. I love it. Mark and Jenny.
Hi, yeah, no, this is great. I think another thing that can help is creating awareness around the shoulds, because sometimes it's like a vague sense.
Oh, sorry, that was my fault.
Oh, that's okay. I was gonna say, sometimes you don't really have language for the shoulds. You don't even know that they've been there because they've been so unconscious or just influences from culture or whatever. So like having language to name things, like, and you do that a lot in your curriculum, like in that sacred power class, you kind of like named a lot of things that like people feel, but until you have language for it, yes. You don't really know. So I'm just wondering, and I think we do this kind of instinctively, but what are good things to think about for questions to create awareness or yeah. Language for some of these shoulds?
Yeah, so there's sometimes it's going to be through questioning, and then sometimes it's going to be through one of the other creating awareness methods that we looked mm-hmm. at, right? So in terms of a question, it might be, you know, and obviously it will depend on the context and what you're talking about, but, you know, something like, who is that vision important to? Who else in your life is that vision important to, right? That could possibly open something up if you have a sense that overbearing father, I don't, you know, whatever it is, right? Or, and we'll get to some other pieces, but like another question that I love, and this is kind of more of a handing over the permission question is, you know, if you could have this any way that you wanted and didn't have to worry about anybody's expectations, what would it be? Right. And then more of the mirroring or reflecting the truth way of creating awareness would be, I know that you've said in the past that your father has really influenced a lot of your decisions. How might that be impacting this vision or this goal mm-hmm. that you're creating? Right. So kind of more of the speaking to it and then asking the question. Mm-hmm. Great. This is such good stuff. I'll add one other question that can sometimes be helpful determining the difference between a desire and a should. On a scale of 1 to 10, how much do you really want this? Or, you know, you can decide where to put the emphasis in that question, right? How much do you really want this, right? That's important, right? We looked at that in questioning, right? Where we put our emphasis and tone is important. Another guideline for really effectively visioning with a client is to, how do I want to say this, bring their core values and priorities into the vision. Bring their core values and priorities into the vision. So I always, when I'm working with a client, in different ways, you know, sometimes I may ask it in a welcome packet. If not, I'm really listening for it always, but particularly in the beginning, when I start working with someone, I'm listening for what their values are. I'm listening for what their values are. And if they're not aware of their values, I'm supporting them to create awareness on their values. If we don't define, or if we aren't aware of our values, our needs, our priorities, then our lives are misaligned from our hearts and from what is true for us. And then our lives, our visions, our goals become based on other people's or on society's values. And then things become based on other people's or on society's values. And then when that happens, that's when we're sleepwalking through our lives. So when I'm working with a client and we're visioning a new project or vision, like whatever it is, one of the things that I'm kind of looking for is this vision, is this goal aligned with my client's core values? And sometimes we may have a discussion on that as well. So core values can be integrity, kindness, freedom, smashing the paradigm. Money could be a core value too, right? There's so many different things, but we want for anything that our clients create or move towards to really be aligned with their values. I'll repeat it. If we don't define or are aware of our values, needs, and priorities for ourselves, then our lives are misaligned from our hearts and what is true for us. And then our lives and our goals become based on other people's values or on society's values, but not our own. And then that's when we start sleepwalking through life. So I've got some inner work questions on these, which I'll make sure you get for homework because they're deep and I want to give them space. But for now, let me ask what's coming up around this, this piece around values. Linda.
Thanks, Joanna. The work around values has always been important to me, but I think since I really started the coaching, it's more prominent in my thinking now. So I have a question. You said when you work with clients, you're listening for the values. Do you do in the beginning, do you do any values clarification? Do you give them homework to do to bring to you for the discussion? Is there something more formal that you do?
Yeah, it's a great question. I used to have a values worksheet that I included in the welcome packet. And let me make a note. I used to share it here in Sacred Depths. And I think somewhere along the way, it fell off. It's long. I don't use it anymore, but I'll share it with everybody because it's a great, you may want to adapt it. There's different things. So you can absolutely use a tool to in support of that. And that's a great thing to do. I don't use it anymore, but I listen, you know, I listen to the client. Does a client talk a lot about integrity? Do they talk a lot about generosity? You know, whatever it is, what am I seeing is really important to them.
Okay. Thanks, Joanne.
Great. Yes. And Solway's saying, and you can ask in the welcome packet, just simply, what are your top values? Beautiful. Anyone else want to say anything around values right now? Maya.
There's a lot of me today, sorry. I am again bringing a tool, and I think this is why I am in this program, because the way I teach is somehow related to what we do here. I find that people, and albeit I work with young people, but people oftentimes find it difficult to name their values, or they become too generic. As an exercise, I ask my students to bring me examples of 5 world citizens that they find inspiring or empowering and tell me why. Very often, it is very easy to pull out a thread out of the people that they hold up as an example or hold up as mentors or something to appreciate or look up and pull the core values out of that.
Brilliant. I love it. Such a great exercise. Thank you. Lisa.
I just thought of one other very practical way to get at values is to see where you spend your money and where you spend your time. I think it's right there.
And which may not always speak to values, right? So to look at, like, is that how you want to be too? But 100% so related or can speak to where the desire versus should, or, you know, whatever is coming in. Yeah, 100%. Time and we'll get to this later in the program, time and money are also very related, right? And then to our self-value. Beautiful. Raka.
Hi. So I have a question around ethics. Can't see you, Joanna, for some reason.
Can you see me now?
the answer she got a review because other, oh yeah, there you are. around ethics and of values and desires, because things, you know, as we all know, like sometimes we can really desire things that are really not good for us and they're not good for other people. And sometimes we can't see that. And similarly for values, you know, we can have like a really materialistic or really harmful values as well that may or may not align with us as practitioners, but also they may be harmful for the person as well. And I just wondered if you could speak to that in terms of like the ethics of our values and desires and how you disentangle that with clients, because I'm sure it would come up in your works.
Yeah, it's such a good question that I feel like I have some answers to, but not fully. And I'll share some. I feel like there's also wisdom in the group about this. So I'll ask for, I know we're almost at 4:30. It's like this juicy question comes with 4 minutes left, right? So I'd love to hear maybe one share on this. I'll share some things and then we can also continue it in the Facebook group or next week. But anybody want to share or answer on Raka's really good question? I know it's like a stumper, right? All right, so I'll say a couple of things for now, and I'll also think, I am going to think more on this because I don't have, like I said, but one of the things I have in my notes, you know, to make notes, so I'm glad that you're speaking to this, is that obviously this isn't just my belief. My clients don't need to have all the same values as I do, but I have had situations very rarely where I've had a client that their values were really in opposition to my values. And in those very, very, very rare cases, I don't feel it's an integrity for me to be the practitioner that holds space for them. So that's one piece. And again, that's my truth that, you know, but I just toss it to you, Raka, and everybody to consider that for yourselves. I will only work with someone if I feel that I can honor and respect their top values with them, right? But it can't be this kind of like secret, like fighting against their values, right? It's not gonna work. So that's one piece. A second piece is, I don't think you can ever change anybody's core value, or at least not like in a couple of sessions, right? So that's the other piece is, kind of that shouldn't be the work, is to change somebody's values, right? That's also out of integrity. But there may be a difference between what appears as a value versus just what that patriarchal messaging is, or messaging from other places, or like kind of belief that got mixed up versus underneath, right? And so sometimes the work is doing the inquiry to actually see what the core value is. Is that enough to go on for now?
Yes, thank you.
Okay, what are you hearing that's important for you?
I think it was that line that you mentioned, you know, in terms of like digging deep and asking, you know, what is this really about? Like, what is underneath? What is the desire underneath it? And because it might be under these layers of like shoulds and conditionings, and often people lose sight of that core. But the other thing I was thinking, it's also about the kind of client you attract, I suppose, you know, that in the way that one speaks about oneself. And so you're more likely to find people who have like aligned, more or less aligned values, if you're explicit about your own. So.
If you're explicit in your marketing about your values, it's very rare that, exactly. Yes. Good. Okay. It's 4:30. Mark and Jenny, I'm going to take your hand in a moment, but I know that some people have to go. So but just before we like officially wrap, we're not meeting next week. We did not get through the full call today. There are more pieces to look at by way of visioning. So I'm going to what your partner homework was going to be this week was for you to take a call to support your partner in creating a vision for themselves. And what I actually wanted you to do is take a full session to do that. And then the next session switch, as opposed to both partners coaching in the same session. So to like really give a full 40 minutes or so for a vision. But we haven't gotten through all of the guidelines. So if you want to like start practicing, that's great. If not, you can wait on partner sessions until we meet next, or just keep on, you know, practicing what you're practicing. I also have some resource sheets that I think I'm going to hold off till next week as well, because we didn't get through everything. For those of you that are working with clients, my invitation to you is to go through your client roster and kind of just make some notes about, do you know what this client's vision is? Do they know what their vision is? Has it changed? You know, if you've done visioning, but maybe you haven't noticed it, you know, just kind of like where the vision is at with each of the clients and what you might want to do around that. Okay, so with that, we'll officially we're done, but I'll take any questions and can't wait to continue the conversation too. Mark and Jenny.
Oh, it's okay. I was just going to comment on your last question when you were opening it to the group and to say, I appreciate how on your website you have values and principles where you say, you know, some of your values, and that's something we want. We've done little bits of and pieces of it, like on sales pages and things, but what we want to do more of and have it more in our marketing, and it just especially with everything that's transpired in the world around Black Lives Matter and all the stuff, we just feel like it's really important to be clear.
Yeah, we started over the past year to find like clever ways to work it in, like asking in the FAQs, like, where do you stand on the important issues of today and stuff? And
I'm glad you're bringing that into the conversation. Like that is such an important piece for me of my website. I think it's like my favorite part of my website, where it's just like, I'm really upfront and clear about what are my values, what's important in this work, what I stand for. And I think that it's important, you know, I mean, and you can choose to be political or not political. I'm not saying one way or the other, but when I choose to invest in a practitioner, I want to know what their values are. And actually, this is a marketing piece too. People buy, obviously they buy because they want a result, right? That's like the top reason why they buy. But then when there are choices, you know, on that, usually the next thing that they're going to look for, I mean, convenience is there, but is values. What is this person or this company's values? And my favorite example of that is Ben and Jerry's ice cream, right? Like they're just like any other. I mean, they have cool flavors, right? They're just like any other ice cream. But what makes them so successful is that they're, you know, their values, you know what that company stands for beyond ice cream. And that is a marketing, I mean, that it's they, it's they're passionate about it, but that is a marketing strategy as well.
Have you ever had a situation, we had just yesterday, it came up, where we're on the phone with someone and she actually wants to work with us. And, you know, we liked her. She was a nice person, but some of her values she shared, I mean, they weren't horrible, but they weren't totally aligned with us. And we were kind of wondering whether this is a good thing. And I'm just wondering, have you ever had a situation where you needed to like let somebody know that you didn't feel like it was a fit because of values, and how do you do that without it coming out feeling really icky for the person?
Yeah, it's such a great question. What was the value or values in particular that didn't feel like a good fit?
Well, so there's this, okay, so for us, there's this fine line between people who are interested in, you know, holistic health and all this kind of stuff, and people who are really anti-science and really like dug in on certain views that like, it's okay if you have those views, but I don't want to help you promote the views in the way that you're wanting to do it. Right. And so sort of like what was coming out was just a worldview that we're going, it might not feel great to be helping this person to be putting this message out in the world.
Yeah.
Because we're not aligned.
Yeah. Yeah. That's so tough. And I think it's, you know, kind of a personal decision around how honest you want to be around that. You know, if you were to kind of like go all the way, you know, to say like, it sounds, you know, I love the passion that you have for your work. It sounds like, you know, there's so many brilliant pieces around X, Y, and Z, but I want to be fully honest. I don't fully resonate with all of the content or with the message. And I know that you would be much better served by a practitioner who is so excited about everything that you're sharing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's really good. Thank you.
Right. So put it on you and then what's best for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's really helpful.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Okay, everybody. Thanks for such a wonderful and rich conversation today. I hope it continues to work on you and through you. I'll send some journaling questions on core values and desires versus shoulds, inner work questions, and we'll continue the conversation in a few weeks. But you know, post in Facebook, let all of us know how things are going and what you need. I'm sending you all a lot of love. Have a great rest of your day.
Thank you.